Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Backpacking Podcast. As always, John Kelly here with my good friend, Jeremiah Stringer, the king of Kentucky backpacking, and also now the freshly new coronated king of the Camino.
I have multiple friends that have done the Camino multiple times. I don't know if I can hold that title.
Yeah, but sure sounds fun to say.
Oh, that's true. You know who I'm hanging out with tomorrow?
I'm hoping it's Mr. Backpacking with Jason, sir.
It is the Emperor.
The King and the Emperor hanging out.
Yes, we're hitting the lake, man, because there's something I want to talk about today on the podcast, and it's about, like, summer backpacking and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But in full honesty, I don't do a ton of backpacking in the summer because it's so hot. Like, I mean, all across the South, we've been hit with this heat wave over the last few weeks. And it's a little bit cooler today. I think it's only like 87 or 88 Fahrenheit. So
only.
I think Mr. Backpacking with Jason, sir, and myself are going to take the kayaks out on the lake and hit that up and cool off a little bit instead of taking a backpacking trip.
Man, that sounds like a fantastic idea.
Couldn't be more excited, man.
Fantastic idea. I think you guys are going to have a good time with that.
I got this backpack that's a cooler. Have you seen these?
Yeah, I have.
This one's made by the brand Ice Mule, and Jason said he's had a few of their products, and they're pretty good. They sent it to me a long time ago, and this is going to be the first time that I've gotten to use it. You got to, like, suck the air out. I don't know if you suck the air out or you add air in for insulation. Do you know?
I have no clue at all. I've never used that stuff before, so you're going to have to figure it out and then come tell me about it.
Well, I guess I'll just ask Jason because he had one similar to it the last trip that we took that was a kayaking. But wish us luck. I'm going to wear a life jacket and hopefully jump in the lake and cool off a little bit.
Yeah, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Well, that was it for the Backpacking Podcast. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. So Jeremiah, you're going out on the lake. Mm-hmm. And the reason you're doing this is because it's so hot. And I know we talked beforehand, and something you wanted to talk about in our episode today was how to deal with heat when you're out in the backcountry.
Yeah, and today I was watching one of Dixie's videos, Homemade Wanderlust, if you haven't seen her YouTube. And
if you haven't, where have you been?
Yeah, she's got a big presence on YouTube. But yeah. 4 days ago, she put out this video, and it was called 9 Tips Every Backpacker Should Know for Sun Protection. And right. I was like, well, it is super hot out, and I think that the shoulder season, spring and fall, are the best for backpacking because it's really buggy right now, and it's super hot. So I thought that, you know, if people did want to get out, what are some of either our stories, experiences, advice, tips, etc., on, like, summer backpacking or just backpacking in the heat in general. Right. So I thought we could unpack that a little bit today. What I have is like the outline on YouTube of Dixie's video. If you click the chapters, then it really just gives people an outline of a video on YouTube. And she talks about how, like, whenever she started backpacking, which is like around 2015, I think, she didn't really use a whole lot of sun protection. You know, she's a southern girl. She's always out in the sun. It's always warm. And she got basal cell carcinoma on her face. So if you go and watch the video, you can see there's some stitches under her eyebrow. And it's where she got the basal cell carcinoma, which is a form of skin cancer, cut out. And then she goes on and gets some advice on protecting yourself from the sun and dealing with the heat and stuff. So,
well, and Eric Hansen from Backpacker TV. Actually, I think he just stopped doing Backpacker TV. Now he's doing his own channel, just Eric Hansen. Oh, nice. But he and Dan Becker, he's the one that was hiking with Dan when Dan crashed on the Grand Canyon. Mm. He was the one that was hiking with Dan. He is also dealing with sunspots and issues from past backpacking experiences out in the sun. And we can talk about what he's doing a little bit later, because it is one of the chapters and it's one of the things that both of us have started doing recently too. So,
well, first I wanted to ask, have you ever had to go to the doctor and get like a skin spot removed from the sun?
No, I haven't.
Okay. My dad, he had a spot removed actually close to where you live, at a doctor's office up there. And they cut out a bunch and had to do like a skin graft and stuff, because he had basal cell carcinoma, but then refused to go to the doctor, and then it just spread. You know, it's like it doesn't go in; it only spreads across the skin. It's that form of skin cancer,
right?
And yeah, they didn't know if they were going to have to remove his ear as well. I mean, I remember I had this teacher in middle school, and I always thought, man, she looks like bacon. Like her skin is all shriveled up, and she's always super, super tan. And I don't know if she's laying in the tanning bed every day or she just like spent all of her time around the pool or something at home. But too much exposure to the sun, dude, especially for people with my kind of skin tone.
I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah. You redheads, man. You got that dark, dark skin, that heavy dose of melatonin in your skin.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's one section of the...
By the way, I'm sorry if I'm making weird faces while we're talking.
Why are you saying
that? So, we went somewhere this week, and I got a bag of kettle corn. And I thought it'd be a great idea for a snack, just to have a little bit of kettle corn before we got online.
Oh, nice.
Now I'm picking kettle corn out from between my teeth. And it's like, it's all over the place. So, if I make weird faces, that's what's happening right now. I've got kettle corn, like, bits. You know how it is with that stuff.
Dude, I thought about taking, so I'm going to cook me a steak tonight. Like, I'm going to stick it in the oven and like season it up and everything. And then that way tomorrow, whenever I get to camp, you know, we make us a little fire and stuff in the evening, then I can just heat the steak back up and it's already cooked to my liking and already, you know, just put a little aluminum foil around it.
Are you freezing it overnight?
No, I don't plan on freezing it, because I'll have that ice mule cooler. So I don't think it'll spoil. Yeah, should be enough room in there to put drinks and, you know, some waters and steak and all that. But long story short, I thought, what would be a good side for my steak with Mr. Backpacking, with Jason, sir? And I decided to get some of those little potatoes, and they're like seasoned up. You can stick them in the microwave. It's like this little...
Yeah, little pearl potatoes.
Yeah. Exactly, and a little bit of bread to take with me. But my first thought was, man, what would be good with that steak? Some corn on the cob. And then I was like, well, that sounds delicious, but it also sounds like a recipe for disaster out at the lake.
A lot of time to cook.
Well, I would already cooked it. I would just heated it up. But the problem is, I feel like I would have been picking it out of my teeth all evening while we're sitting around the campfire. Yes. So maybe you should have skipped the kettle corn like I skipped the... the corn on the cob.
So here's the problem. So I've changed my eating habits. I eat way better than I used to. Mm-hmm. And today I had the choice between a banana or kettle corn.
Oh.
I didn't go with a banana.
It's an easy choice.
So, I've learned my lesson. I'll never do it again until the next time.
Well, before we start.
Let's get back to what we're talking about. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut that. I just know if people were watching this on YouTube and we're seeing like these weird faces that I'm making, I'm literally trying to pick stuff out of my teeth without using my fingers. So,
how courteous of you.
Yeah, you should see. I mean, I'll make sure we do some paused screen caps of this so people can see just how ridiculous I look.
Well, what I was saying before the kettle corn gate was...
kettle gate.
Yeah, the kettle gate. Whenever I was doing the Camino, there's one long section that was called the Mazetta. And... it's really, really flat and really, really hot, totally exposed. There's like no trees, like there's no, I don't know, there's nowhere to hide from the sun. So here was my strategy. I knew I had to either wear lots of clothing or put on lots of sunscreen. So I decided to wear full long pants, but very, very light, and a sun hoodie, which Dixie talks about in this video. And
which I'm a big fan of.
Oh, I love the sun hoodies. And you know what she said in there is she hasn't tried the sun hoodie. She hasn't jumped on the trend, but she knows, you know, they're really trending up. And I would highly encourage her to try it out because,
oh yeah,
the sun. She says you can use sun gloves too, especially. I have those. Yeah, I wish that I'd had them because. So I had my long pants, long sleeves, and I even if I wasn't wearing the hat or the hood, then I would put on. I would put up my umbrella, you know, attach it to my backpack. And I just released a new video on Monday of this week on my YouTube channel, and I talked about in there, some people were, like, making fun of me and taking pictures of me, and I didn't find out till later on that they were doing this stuff. And I actually had one of them. I became friends with one of them, and I was like, you got to send me that video. And I put a little B-roll in my video from what they sent me, just like a cell phone video, them walking, you know, 50 feet behind me, you know, capturing me with my little sun umbrella. But the point is that everything was protected. I didn't have to use a whole lot of sunscreen except for my hands. So there was one day I walked all day. Everything's protected. I even have the long sleeves on. But the sun hoodie that I have is made by Outdoor Vitals. And the sun hoodie that they produce doesn't have those little thumb holes. You know what I'm talking about at the end of the sleeves? Yep. Well, yep. If you have the thumb holes, you can pull your sun hoodie down and it almost covers your whole hand. You know, there's just like a little bit of fingers and just the, you know, just below where your fingers connect to your hand that's exposed. Dude, right. Everything's perfect. You know, I'm hot and sweaty and everything. But I get done for the day and then go about, you know, the normal routine on the Camino. Take your shower, whatever. About to go to bed and I look down and
your hands are on fire.
My hands are beet red, dude. And it's funny, like the rest of the trip, I had this tan line. You know, none of me is tanned because I'm totally covered up. And I caught a little bit of flack whenever I got back because people are like, you know, you've been outside every day for 5 or 6 weeks backpacking. You should be really tanned now. And I was like, yeah, there's only one thing that's tan. And I show them my hands.
The back of your hands.
The back of my hands, the part exposed to the sun. So you use the sun gloves. What?
I started using them probably, it was either late 2020 or early 2021. I started using them. And it was only for days like when I was going to be out and it was going to be hot and there was going to be a lot of sunlight and I was doing long miles.
Mm.
Otherwise, I didn't really have a need for them. But like the thing that people don't realize is if you're hiking with trekking poles, if you're not using trekking poles, it's a little different.
Yeah.
But if you're using trekking poles, your hands are, you know, they're up in front of you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And the backs of your hands are facing out towards the sun most of the time. And so the area along your index finger and across the top of your hand just get a ton of sunlight, and having sun gloves are great. And they're usually really thin. I think I have a pair of white outdoor research ones that mm-hmm. I've used, and they work great. They help a ton. I remember the first time I got sunburned on my hand, I was like, I'm done with that.
I think aren't they really, really popular out west, like PCT, CDT, desert sections?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, people who hike up in those higher elevations where you don't have all of the cloud or the cover from trees,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to have it. I mean, there's no cover at all. Like when I did Kilimanjaro, you got up above a certain level and there's just no more trees. And I know that there are people that do a lot of hiking up in the high Sierras and things like that, and you're just exposed.
Well, I'll tell you, it's different strokes for different folks. And I think that, you know, people dress differently all around the world. So whenever I was on the Camino, some people, especially a lot of Asian people, there's a ton of South Koreans, they would, you know, be covered up head to toe, and some of them even with a mask too. In fact, I became friends with a guy named Peter from Belgium, so nowhere near South Korea, but he looked like a ninja, you know. He was covered head to toe, and he had on like one of those wide brim hats all the way around, like a safari hat. And yeah. It also had like the drape, and then it connected, back up to the bill. So the only thing that was exposed on his whole body, he had full gloves on too, not just sunglasses. Only thing exposed was just like a slit so that he could see out. So telling you, the cultures where I guess they get a lot of sun, maybe they have it figured out on the covering up. But Bridget, she decided she wanted to tan, and she wore pants every day. But then in the afternoons, she'd always put shorts on. But she'd sometimes roll up her sleeves while we were walking. But then she had to put on so much sunscreen. And you even heard her, you know, whenever we had her on and we first started talking about the Camino whenever we got back. And she was like, oh, my gosh, I hate sunscreen so much now because you're putting it on, you know, like 100 times a day.
And you got to cake it on, too, when you're dealing with that much sunlight.
Yeah, you just sweat it off. Speaking of, Dixie's like second chapter on her video, I was just looking at it, and it's like wear sunscreen. I like, personally, I'd rather be covered up than to put on a bunch of sunscreen all the time. I mean, I'm going to wear it at the lake tomorrow, but.
But you're not covering up if you're going out on the lake.
I'll still put on the sunscreen. Dude, let me tell you this real quick. So a couple weeks ago, another couple that we're friends with rented a boat, a pontoon, and they took us out, and it was super fun. But long story short, they had like a tube that you pull behind it so you could like sit in there and they could drag you around the lake and take you over the waves and stuff. Really, really fun. But I put on sunscreen, right? And then I had a life jacket, and I was like, oh, this is covering, you know, this is basically covering me like a vest. You know, it's a life jacket. But there is like a 3 to 4 inch space between the bottom of the jacket and my waistline. So I got a strip of sunburn on the bottom of my belly. And still, now, like that was 2 weeks ago, right? So now there's like a tan strip right below my belly button.
So it's like right above your belt line.
Yeah, it looks totally ridiculous. I'm going to see if Jason notices it tomorrow because, you know, we'll be out. We'll have our shirts off swimming and stuff at the lake. I'm going to see if he says anything because it looks like I have like some kind of skin condition or something because my skin is so white, especially on my belly where, you know, it was covered up all summer. My son.
One life, live it.
That's right. We'll see if he says anything. But, yeah, I'd rather be covered up. But, obviously, you know, that's not going to work in the water. Maybe I have a life jacket on at some points. But, yeah. Speaking of sunscreen, too, she also talked about the chemical sunscreen versus the physical sunscreen. I don't really understand that. Do you? The chemical versus the physical?
Well, I haven't watched the video, so I don't know. I'll have to watch the video and see what she's talking about.
She kind of explains it, you know, for a couple minutes there, but I still am not really clear. So, I don't know. Maybe some of our subscribers or listeners know a little bit more.
Well, and she has something about internal sunscreen. Now, what is internal sunscreen?
You know, I don't know what that is either. I don't know if I know that there's different types of sunscreens, right? So you actually have to watch it, especially in some other countries, because their sunscreen, sometimes it's hard to find some that doesn't have a bleach agent in it.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, because they want their skin to be light, you know. In some cultures, like while I was living in Ecuador, if you worked outside in the sun a lot, then that was like a blue-collar job. So it's a sign of, like, wealth and prosperity if your skin was of a lighter color because that meant that you weren't working outside constantly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's different here in the States, right? Because I was just talking about my middle school teacher, and she wanted to be super tan, you know, and she was Caucasian, but she was super, super tan. So I guess it kind of depends on where you live. But, yeah, some of those countries, dude, you know, you got to go to the pharmacy to get sunscreen, and it has like a bleaching agent in it. So you got to be careful which ones you buy, you know, when you're traveling.
Yeah. I like her next chapter on here because she put down, don't trust the base tan theory. And I think we all know what that is. Basically, once you have your base tan, don't worry about sunscreen anymore because it'll just continue to build the tan.
Yeah. And yeah. It's totally not true.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, it is true that you'll get a deeper tan, right? But it's not true that it's going to protect you from the UV rays.
Yeah. You're still risking a lot. And honestly, I know people that have had those base tans and still got burnt to a crisp. And yeah, just because you have that base tan doesn't mean you can't get a sunburn.
I just wish I could get a base tan. You know what I mean? I wish I could. Maybe I can. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, man. You got them beautiful red locks of yours, you know? Like, embrace it, bro. Embrace the ginger life. That's what you need to do.
That's the only thing I can do. She also says the hike with the umbrella, which I already talked about earlier.
That was the thing I was going to say, like, that we both do. I hike with an umbrella.
Oh, I didn't know you hiked with the umbrella.
Same one you got.
Yeah, the Gossamer Gear. What's it called?
I don't know. Ultralight umbrella thing.
It's called Light something, because I said in my video, and people are like, yeah, it's called this. I was like, I don't know what it's called.
It's the Ultralight umbrella from Gossamer Gear.
Yeah, they only sell one, I believe. Silver on top.
This right here.
Black on bottom. Yeah, that's it. John's right showing it.
Black on the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, they
ASMR.
Make... more ASMR. They make... do you have the attachments where you can strap it on your backpack?
I see no need for them. I can just tuck it into my sternum strap, and it just stays in place.
That's exactly what I did. But, dude, in the wind, I couldn't use it. Like, I had to sunscreen up. Like, I put on a hat, put on my hood, and you know, that is a very resilient umbrella for the wind. But when it gets real windy, no umbrella is going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I used it, actually, when I was hiking a couple weeks ago, and I had a section of road walking for about 2 miles,
mm-hmm.
and it just started to downpour. And, dude, I didn't wear a raincoat that whole day.
You just used the umbrella?
I had that umbrella with me. Just use the umbrella.
It's so
awesome.
It's so much better if you know, if the rain's not coming sideways, the
but
umbrella.
Even if it is, here's the thing. I've got a new way of thinking about rain.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is a side note, and everybody's going to be like, get back to the topic. But here's the thing. I've got this, to me, if it's 85 degrees out and I put on a raincoat, I'm getting wet.
Oh, yeah.
Except what I'm getting wet with is dehydrating me.
Yeah, the sweat.
And it's sweat, and it smells awful. Yep. Or at least the top half of my body stays dry, and around my waist and gut gets wet, but it's water. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not sweating it out.
Yeah, and so you're not dehydrating as quickly. And, yeah, you're wet, but you're going to be wet wearing a raincoat. Anybody who's worn a raincoat in warm weather during a storm will tell you point blank, you might as well just take the coat off. Because you're going to get soaked on the inside of the coat, and it's gross. It's the gross kind of getting soaked.
Yeah. I try to use the bit zips and then, like, partially unzip, but it's still not as cool as not having the rain jacket on. The umbrella, dude, legit. You know, one of the first people I seen using the umbrella was Miyagi.
Really?
Yeah. Anytime I talk about it during the video, there's one time we were at the gorge, and it was, like, December. But for some reason, it was, you know, 73 degrees. It was like December the 28th or something.
I remember that because we were all supposed to go down to North Carolina for a trip.
Yeah, and we had to switch the
plane. Storms came in. Yeah, storms came in North Carolina. It was going to be nasty. And so we all decided to do the Red River Gorge instead. And then I had a funeral I had to go to and had to miss it.
Yeah.
I remember that very vividly.
Yeah, Jason was supposed to go too. And he was like, no, dude, they're giving like 40 mile per hour gust. I'm not going. I pulled a camper that time. That was whenever Miyagi's his tarp got torn loose, and he
his hammock got filled with water, didn't it?
Yeah, his hammock got filled with water. So while we were out, you know, we were trying to beat the rain. We're like, let's get in. We knew there was a warm front coming in, right? So obviously,
right.
It's December in Kentucky. It's supposed to be cold, but it's in the 70s. So you're like, this is really weird. There's a warm front coming in with severe thunderstorms, and we saw that it wasn't supposed to start raining until whatever time, you know, sometime in the early afternoon, I think. And so we was like, let's get in some backpacking in the morning or some hiking. I don't think we took our backpacks. And we went around, and then on the way back, it started pouring the rain at one point, and I have this B-roll that I use all the time whenever I'm talking about rain, because several times Miyagi's in there with his umbrella and, you know, the rest of us are getting drenched in our rain jackets. And here he is walking along in his 4-inch inseam shorts, his legs, you know, nothing's wet on him except from the knee down, you know, his shoes are wet, but he had that umbrella and I was like, I got to get one of those.
Yeah. Ever since I've used one, I'll never not at this point, even, you know, and it weighs so little. Like I did a trip. It was like a 2 or 3 day trip and my base weight was still right at about 10 pounds with the umbrella.
Well, it doesn't add much weight. It's such a light umbrella.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no reason not to. It weighs less than my raincoat.
Yeah, you still bring the raincoat?
I did this last time, and I'm kind of wishing I just didn't, you know? But at the same time, you kind of need to, because if you have to set up in the rain,
mm-hmm.
you can't walk around with an umbrella and set up your tent.
Or if it gets really windy and you can't use the umbrella.
Right.
You kind of want that jacket.
Well, in the summer, I don't bring a puffy jacket if we're here in Kentucky. I just don't bring a puffy because it's not going to get cold enough for one.
Yeah, the low's like 74.
Yeah. So it's like I'll bring a mid layer and a raincoat, you know, and if it really does start to get a little chilly, I'll put the mid layer on. And if it starts getting a little cooler than that, I'll just put the raincoat on over the mid layer and I'll be fine.
Yeah, the rain jacket is such a great outer layer.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so sun protection. We really went backwards there.
Oh, that's okay. We're not. We don't.
The umbrella is fantastic for rain, but it's also fantastic for giving you shade. And a lot of people on the PCT, especially in the desert part of that, carry an umbrella with them.
Oh my gosh, dude! Yes, the people could make fun of me all they wanted, and that's what I told them whenever we were going through the Mazetta. I was like, "You can laugh, but there's two of us here, and only one of us is walking in the shade all day."
And that's right.
That's me.
That's right. That's right.
Dixie also said, beware of the sideways sun. So, like, earlier in the day or later in the day, you know, everybody's all about, like, it's high noon, it's hot, stop, take a break, find some shade. But the sun's still hitting you in the morning and the afternoon. I think you're supposed to wear sunscreen until 6 p.m. I could just be making
that
up. Whenever we were out on the boat doing the tubing and all that a couple weeks ago, one of our friends, I was like, you know, it's like 5 o'clock. I don't think I need any more sunscreen. She was like, well, according to whatever she quoted, doctors or I don't know, some magazine or something, who knows. She's like, you're supposed to wear it until 6 o'clock because the rays can still be harmful. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I've always been told the morning sun into the afternoon is pretty brutal, mm-hmm. but the evening sun isn't as dangerous.
Really?
Now, here's understand. I heard that. That doesn't mean that's right. I'm just saying that's what I'd always thought. So, yeah, we should probably study that more.
Bridget and I
sound like we know what we're talking about.
We were in the Dominican Republic on our honeymoon. This was several years ago, like 7 or 8 years ago. And we're at this place. It's like a resort or whatever. And it's at the beach. And she always wanted to go out and get in the pool or in the ocean whenever it was really hot, like 2 p.m. And I was like, okay, I understand it, but I would always put it off as long as possible because I didn't want to get sunburned. So I was like, if we don't go in there till like 5 o'clock, then I don't have to wear any sunscreen. She was like, you're defeating the whole purpose of having the beach or the pool here. It's there so that we can get in when it's hot to cool off. I was like, okay, all right.
But ginger life.
Yeah, you live it, dude. I call it shade hopping. You hop from shade to shade. You know, like if you live in Florida, you air condition hop, you know?
Yeah.
Get out of your car.
Shade and hop. That's fantastic, man. You need to make a t-shirt out of that. Oh, speaking of, do you have merch yet?
No merch yet, but we haven't had Jeff Carmire back on yet, so still got a little time.
I'm calling him. We're going to get him on here next week.
Okay, there's a couple other things on here that I wanted to mention. A couple of them I'm going to skip because it's about, like, getting sunburnt in the cold. And I really wanted to focus
more on
the heat.
Although I do want to say, take extra precautions in the snow. That is a big one. That is a big, big one. Because when we don't get as much snow here, but if you live up north,
oh yeah,
that sun reflecting off of the snow is brutal.
Yeah, she was like, talking about putting sunscreen in her nostrils so that she didn't get sunburn from below. I guess the sun reflecting off the snow.
That's a new one for me. I'm thinking more of your eyes because it says protect your eyes in there. When I did Kilimanjaro, I brought a pair of sunglasses that were made specifically for mountaineering.
What's the difference?
What are they called? Just the amount of sun protection in the lenses. They're really dark.
Uh-huh.
Because when you get up there, there's nothing. You know, you're above the clouds for a lot of the hike.
Yeah, it's full exposure.
So there's nothing protecting your eyes. Yeah. And what are those things called, man? I bought them years ago. They're still in my truck.
Goggles?
No, I didn't get the goggles.
But, I always think those look so cool. People are using them for basketball.
Oh, yeah? No, I can't remember what they're called. But I had to get those glasses. And they protect not only your eyes in the front, but they also protect the sides. So,
oh, I see. They're like
wide along the sides so you don't get sun coming in the sides of your sunglasses hurting your eyes.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal when it's really bright out. Like, people can't underestimate the power of the sun, especially if it's reflecting off of something that's really bright.
Yeah. She's talking about how she used to only get like the $5 Dollar General sunglasses. And she's like, I'm on the AT. I'm going to drop them. If I break them, I can just stop by the gas station, get another $10 pair or whatever. But she's talking about after getting that surgery is a big deal. So you start getting like sunspots cut out of your face, you know, especially around your eyes and stuff. I guess it wakes you up a little bit of the real risks. And she's like talking about what kind of sunglasses and what kind of protection and how far around the eyes that they should go. Because I got a pair of baseball glasses that are like that. They kind of curve around your face, and it really prevents, you know, the sun from the side.
Yeah. Well, I'm considering getting LASIK right now, and part of it is so that I can wear sunglasses.
Yeah, make sure.
I don't really want to pay extra for prescription sunglasses. I'd rather just be able to buy a pair and wear them.
Yeah, I have the transition lenses, but one of the downsides is, like, if you're going swimming, you don't want to wear your prescription glasses because, like, I lost a pair of sunglasses whenever we were out on that boat a couple weeks ago. So if I was wearing my eyeglasses, then I'm like, oh, I guess I'm spending the rest of the day at the lake and, you know, I'm squinting trying to see stuff.
Yeah. Well, and for me, that's the whole thing. It's like I always have to wear my glasses. I have no choice. And because I'm up in age, I am aged, as they like to say, I have the bifocals. And so I can't just not wear them. You know what I mean?
Can you do the contacts?
Yeah, but it's weird because the way they work is you've got one that sees at distance and one that sees close.
Mm-hmm.
Or I still have to, it's that, or I see from a distance and I have to wear reading glasses, which defeats the purpose of having contacts.
I don't know. I think the reading glasses make people look like elegant. Like you gain some IQ points when you put on reading glasses because you're like, that's why I'm putting on my glasses here.
Listen, man, if you look in here at my thing, I've got your face behind me over here.
You got that bag out.
it's right there. You know, do I look like somebody who's worried about looking like I have a high IQ right now? Probably not.
Maybe not.
I
was going to tell you about the LASIKs. Before we wrap on Dixie's video and talk about some other advice on backpacking in the heat, because we've mostly stuck to sun so far. The LASIKs, as far as I know, there's two different ones that you can get. And one, there's a guarantee on it that if it needs to be done again, they'll do it for free. And the other is just like a one-time thing. So if you do the LASIKs, I would pay the extra. I have a buddy, and his lasted like, I don't know, maybe 2 years, 3 years, and it was several thousand dollars. And he's like, I wish I had paid the extra however many thousand it was so that because now he's back in glasses or contacts every day. And I'm like, dude.
Really? That's interesting.
You pay like $4,000 or $5,000, and then 2 years later you're back in glasses. Like, how angry would you be? You know, that's a lot of money.
How did that happen? I didn't even know that was possible.
Oh, yeah, I think it's very, very common. Give that a goog. I think it's pretty common that, like, what percent of LASIK surgeries has to be redone or something like that. You find anything about that?
I'm actually going to look it up because that's interesting.
I'm pretty sure that's really common. I can ask my my friend that's an optometrist. Yeah, see what that says there. And I think it was like 2,500 more. Maybe it's like 4,000 to get the basic LASIKs. It's like two different machines too. But I think it's maybe 2,500 extra to get the they'll redo it again, you know.
Okay, so this is what it says. According to a study that examined LASIK's permanence, only 3.5% of LASIK patients needed LASIK enhancement after 10 years. Most of the time, needing to repeat LASIK surgery after 10 years might be necessary because of an underlying condition that changes the vision over time, such as cataracts or presbyopia.
So 3.5%, according to that study. I don't know what.
According to that.
What site that is.
And that was February 22nd, 2021.
Okay. Well, I'm sure the technology's pretty close to the same. I mean, it's been a couple of years. I don't see optometry just like shooting up in technology in a couple of years. Yeah, 3.5%. Well, that's a lot of people. Still a lot of people if, you know, there's millions of people every year getting LASIKs. I don't know how many people are getting LASIKs every year, but if it's a million people, you know, 3.5%. That's still several people.
Yeah. I would just like to not wear glasses anymore. That'd be really nice.
I'm with you. I've been wearing glasses since ninth grade.
Yeah, I think I was seventh or eighth grade, something like that.
Yeah. It especially sucked in football. Like, my family didn't have the money to pay for contacts. So then in football, you could wear glasses, but you really needed the goggles, right? Because the goggles don't have, like, the sharp temple, whatever these are called. I think they're just called temples. Yeah. So I had the metal frame, you know, some cheapy glasses. Then you get hit, your helmet gets rocked, you can break your glasses, you can get cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you're playing without them, and then you can't see real well. But luckily I was a lineman, so I only had to see the guy that's 18 inches in front of me, push him around a little bit. Yeah.
Yep. It's funny, looking at you now, nobody would be like, man, he must have been an offensive lineman. They'd probably be like, I wonder if he was a tight end. You know, like, they're not looking at you thinking lineman, but it's like people forget that you've lost 100 pounds.
Yeah, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you very much, man.
So, yeah, dude. Okay, so let's talk about heat a little bit.
Yeah, I have a little video clip to show you where this girl is talking about. She's talking about heat.
Okay, let me see if I can pull this up for us here.
Well, the whole thing's all right. Not all about heat, but...
Three things my mom always taught me to do before you go on a backpacking trip.
I'm excited to hear it.
Always trim your toenails before you leave for your hike. This will prevent them from pushing into your shoe and from cutting into your other toes. Second, start hydrating 3 days before your trip. You're going to feel so much better and your body will thank you. And last, as soon as you feel a hot spot coming on, sit down and take care of it. Get it covered to help prevent that blister from forming. Three things...
Okay. You can switch it back over to us. So, her second point there was... hydrate 3 days before going.
I thought it was toenails was the second one.
No, I think the toenails was the first one, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I think toenails, she said clip your toenails before you go, which is also really good advice for, like, vacations. You know, if you're going on a week-long vacation, you can't always stop by somewhere and get some toenail clippers. But if you'll just clip your toenails and fingernails before you go, you know, you'll be good to go.
Yeah. And what other thing that people don't know, if you're someone who wears toe socks, you definitely want your toenails clipped because you can wear out toe socks pretty quick by having sharp toenails that aren't clipped.
Yeah, I've worn out two, I think.
So, yeah. Maybe three. Anyways, okay, so let's talk about the next topic she mentioned.
Okay, the second one, I believe, was hydrate 3 days before you go. And so I heard this, and I was like, I wonder how important that is. And I really wonder how important it is if you're going to be going in weather like we have now. So I was curious to hear your thoughts on just the basic of, should you really start pre-hydrating?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
If you remember a few weeks ago, we had a guest on who told us the same thing, that hydrating in advance is really important because your body absorbs all of that water. Right now for me, I don't have to think about it because I've been drinking a gallon of water a day since May. Mm. And, I will say I noticed it when I was hiking. Like I noticed it. And, at the end of the day, when I wasn't as hydrated as I normally am, I really noticed that. And, made sure I drank as much water as I could whenever I had the opportunity.
Whenever you're saying you noticed it, what exactly are you talking about that you noticed?
You can feel like if you've been hydrating with a gallon of water a day for months,
yeah,
and you get to the end of a day and you've been hiking 15 miles or so and you've had almost a gallon of water, but because you've sweat so much and because you've burned so many calories and you've probably lost a lot of that water that you didn't normally lose. Mm-hmm. 'Cause even though I was working out twice a day, I wasn't hiking 15 miles. You know what I mean?
Nothing compares to 20 pounds on your back walking 15 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's completely different. And so, by the end of the day, I was feeling it and I can't imagine what it would have been like had I not been hydrated the way I was before I got on the trail. So you feel it. I've done hiking trips where at the end of the day, I go to use the bathroom. My urine's almost brown because I'm so dehydrated because I didn't take care of it like I should.
So you're talking about like you can feel internally the like tilt from neutral in your body.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I could tell a difference because I didn't do this in the past. So what I found was I had more energy and I felt better throughout my day hiking than I have in past trips. Because in past trips, I wasn't as hydrated. And so it definitely makes a difference.
I know, like, with me playing basketball, if you are starting to cramp, like if you play a sport, then obviously you're dehydrated. But, like, really what that means is you didn't do the work before. Like, if you're cramping, it's already too late, you know?
Right.
Like, it's hard. You see with professional athletes, I mean, they are top tier. Or even like college athletes, they're way better than anything that I could compare to. So if they're cramping, sometimes you can't finish the game because like your body, even with an IV, it's hard to get your body to the state where it's able to keep performing.
Yeah, because you can't just drink a half a gallon of water because you're going to urinate out most of it anyways because if your body doesn't have time to absorb that in like it needs to.
I think it's like... I can't remember what I was reading. You know, I did a ton of research whenever I was trying to lose weight, you know, and trying to get healthy. But I can't remember where I read it, but it was like your body can only process like around a liter of water per hour. So if you're drinking more than that, then it's not really helping. In fact, sometimes drinking too much water, you know, you can lose nutrients. Like, I think we might have had Colette on. She's a nutritionist. Maybe I'm mistiling her. But we're talking about, if I remember correctly, my grandpa, he would just sit and drink water all day and eat, like ice chips. And he had a potassium deficiency from too much water. And, like, had to be hospitalized and put an IV in and, you know, got all of his numbers back to normal. But, yeah, too much of a good thing is a bad thing.
You know, that need for electrolytes that you talked about in your video today that was sponsored by Element.
Yeah, I would add use some kind of electrolytes, too, especially if you're going to be walking in the heat. So it doesn't matter really what it is. I mean, we also talked to Colette a little bit about that, too. Like, there's different amounts of sodium, potassium, and magnesium in most of these electrolyte mixes, whether it is... you know, like Mio you buy at Walmart, or whether it's Liquid IV, or whether it's Element, or whoever. You got to kind of find what agrees with your body, but electrolytes are going to help.
Yeah, and honestly, the more hydrated you are, the better your body just feels when you're out there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the big thing. It's like there's nothing worse than just being uncomfortable on trail, to just not feeling good. You know what I mean? Like, when you get on trail, one of the things you want is you just want to feel like you're at the optimal place you need to be at to conquer the miles you're about to do.
And isn't there some kind of pinch test where you pinch the backside of your hand and the elasticity of your skin tells you how hydrated you are?
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've heard there's another one where you can see how long your skin stays white after you grab it or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm ignorant to that stuff. We're definitely not doctors, so
no.
We're not giving that advice today.
I think
being hydrated is probably more important almost than food.
Oh yeah, it can save your life.
Yeah, it really is so important. And I'm one of those guys that I'll have a little extra water with me. I'd rather carry a little extra water weight to make sure that I'm hydrating than just get what I need at each stop and just have the one bottle the whole time. I do appreciate the lighter weight, but you don't always know when you get to the next water supply it's actually going to be any good.
Yeah, especially if it's a new area for you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that's awesome about the Camino is there were like founts. Like you just press the button and the water comes out.
Oh, know? Man.
So
that's nice.
Yeah, I think there's only like one stretch where it was like maybe 13 kilometers or something without water. But a lot of times there's food trucks or something, you know, parked halfway in between.
I know on the northern part of the Sheltoe Trace, there's a point where you get to where there's a water spigot. And you can get water from that. But then after that, you don't have anything until you get to the campus of Morehead University.
So how long is that stretch?
Pretty sure that's where it is. It's it's several miles.
Wow.
I want to say, 8 to 10 miles.
Yeah, 10 miles is a long way with no water refill. Because your backpack is so heavy. That's something that people really have to deal with, like on the PCT, right? On the desert section. So they'll be carrying, you know, if you're dry camping, I don't know how many liters. Is like 5 liters a stupid number to throw out there?
No, I think you're right. I know guys that when they backpack in Texas, they're carrying 5 liters with them. Or in the Badlands, you know.
Just desolate.
Again, yeah, there's nothing there. So it's like you have to bring in all the water you're going to use, or you do the whole hike and then get to your car and get more water later, you know, and then come back out again. Mm. You know, that's you don't have a lot of choices when there's no water. You've got to get it somehow.
I was going to say, I think probably one of my biggest pieces of advice on the hiking in the heat and stuff is if you're going to do a lot of miles, get up early. Like Bridget and I, we knew that there's one day we were doing 40 kilometers and we got up like 4:35 a.m. because the sun.
Absolutely.
You want to get in. Like whenever I was on the long trail, you know, we'd joke around because it's very popular for through hikers. They'll be like, yeah, I'm trying to get 20 by noon. And you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's an insane number.
So you guys hiked 25 miles that day.
Yeah, that was a big day.
Yeah, I'm online right now, and I wanted to see that because when you said that, I was like, "Dang, bro, that's some serious miles you're doing."
Yeah, it was like 41.5 kilometers. It's a long day.
That's impressive, man. I'm highly impressed.
Well, thanks. But my takeaway is if you get up and knock out as much as you can early, and like wait to take your break until it's starting to get hot, then you can really crush out some miles, even though it's going to be hot, you know?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can.
You got
right about that.
You got any other heat stuff that you want to add? There's a few video clips that I want to show you that are short form content.
Yeah, I want to say we take advantage of your water supplies that you get to, and not just to drink, but if you're taking a buff with you, put that thing in the water, soak it up, and put it on your head.
Oh,
pull yourself down. Take your shirt. Like, if it's 90 plus degrees outside, take your shirt off, soak that sucker, and put it back on. You know, give yourself the option to cool down when you get the chance to cool down. A few years ago, when I almost had a heat stroke when we were out the one time. And one of the guys, Mark, that was with us, he was really struggling with the heat too. He just laid down in the creek.
Oh, he pulled the Miyagi.
Laid down in the creek because he needed to cool his body down. Looking back, I'm wondering if I would have been better off if I'd have done that too. You know? Yeah.
Chafing would be better than a heat stroke.
Yeah. And what was worse was we got to the water supply and my Sawyer squeeze had seized up and wasn't working anymore.
Oh, yeah, that could be disaster.
That was miserable. If you guys hadn't been there, I'd have been in big trouble.
Yeah, but I always think whenever I'm going with a group, you know, if my stove or something doesn't work, then I'm sure that I can scavenge off someone.
We'll all share. We're all good about that.
If you're flying solo, though, you really got to make sure you got your ducks in a row.
Yeah, and I would say, too, one of the things that people don't do in the heat is they don't cook food.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and cook the food. It's better that you eat what you need to eat for fuel, because that's going to help your body after you sleep through the night. That's going to help your body cool itself down. Your body still needs to have like the right nutrients and things in it to help your body do the things it needs to do. And you need to make sure at night, even though you don't really want to eat because you're hot, you feel mm-hmm. gross, eat your dinner. You just burned a lot of calories and you burned a lot of vitamins and stuff from inside your body. You need to fill that back up. And you will appreciate it the next day, even though it's hot outside.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So there's my two cents, man. You want to show me some videos?
Yeah, these are all really short, less than 60 seconds. But some of them we may just watch. Some we may talk about a little bit. You know, we still have a little time left. I wanted to go through here. This first one, just to set it up, it is all about dehydrating your own meals.
If I had known how easy dehydrating our own backpacking meals was, I would have started way earlier. Pre-made meals are a really easy option for backpacking, but they typically cost around $10 per meal, and that can really add up for a long trip. I love making our own meals because it's cheaper, I can tailor the ingredients and flavors to what I like, and I can portion them to be the right amount of food for each of us. We were gifted this Hamilton Beach dehydrator a couple years ago from family, and it was seriously one of the best gifts we've ever gotten. I can usually fit about 4 meals worth of food on it, and it's much easier than I originally expected. You can use reusable mats or parchment paper to make the trays really easy to clean. Once you cook the food as normal, you just place it evenly on each tray, set your temperature and time, and let it dehydrate for 8 to 12 hours with a few stirs in between. You can put the meal into a reusable bag, or if you're tight on space and are using a bear canister, a Ziploc bag. Then, when you're at camp, you can rehydrate it with boiling water and enjoy a homemade meal in the backcountry. If I had known how easy...
Okay.
I've done that.
You have a dehydrator?
Yeah.
Here's something I don't understand. Why did they dehydrate macaroni?
Well, they cooked it probably with salty water,
mm-hmm.
so it gave a little extra flavor to the pasta, and so when they dehydrated it, you kept that in there.
I see. Because I'll take sometimes macaroni with me, and, you know, it's already dehydrated. It's pasta.
Yeah.
All right. This next one is backpacking before and after kids. Yeah, I thought this was just
cute. Oh, man, I'm looking forward
to
this one.
This is by Osprey Packs Instagram. It's a lovely couple headed out to backpack together. So, what did you think about the backpacking before kids and after kids? Do you think that's pretty accurate?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, man. Like, I was supposed to take my daughter backpacking this July.
Yeah.
And what happened in July this year? Satan's heat, like, attacked our state. Like,
we got this heat wave, man.
And a 6-year-old girl is not going to want to go sleep out in that kind of heat and be out there and that kind of stuff. And so we're probably going to do some kind of an overnight thing in September, you know, maybe October. Before the time change anyways, if that still happens, I don't even know anymore. But we're definitely going to do a trip, but you have to entertain your kids, man. You have to make them want to come back. So a lot of guys I've talked to, like Devin Ashby, Backcountry Exposure, he was telling me you can let your kids bring a toy with them, you know? Bring something that they can have that's like from home, because with us, we bring like pillows and we bring things that help us sleep like we sleep at home. Well, you got to think your kid's the same way.
Yeah.
If your kid sleeps with a stuffed animal, bring that stuffed animal with you.
That's a good idea, man. The kids get a luxury gift too, or a luxury item too.
Yeah, but you've got to bring it all. Like, they can carry a backpack, but kids can only carry like 5 pounds. You know, like little kids.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to carry all their stuff. You're gonna have to have a big enough tent for two of you. Knowing that child is probably going to, like, roll all over you throughout the night. Yeah. You know, it's just, it is what it is. But yeah, I see that. That was 100% correct. That's beautiful.
Well, speaking of packing your stuff, I'm going to hop ahead because this guy right here, I want to give credit to the first one, by the way. Theirs is the Adventure Addicts. The underscore Adventure Addicts. Adventure Addicts, all one word. 208,000 followers on Instagram. So
wow, they got their Instagram game going, don't they?
Yeah, it's popping. But this guy is Creed AZ Official. So I'm not really sure how to pronounce it.
I'm assuming that's Arizona.
Could be, but I think the guy, well, I like his accent. That's all I'll say. I'm not really sure where he's from.
Okay.
I'll let you check it out.
So how do you decide what all things you should carry for your next hike? Try and apply this three stacks method next time you pack your backpack for a trek. Now, all you have to do is arrange all your gear that you're thinking to carry with you in three different stacks. Stack number one is of absolute necessities. This will have items such as base layers, your tent, your sleeping bag, your first aid kit. The second stack will contain items which are nice to have. For example, camp slippers and earphones. The third stack is of luxury items. For example, a moka pod, DSLR, tripod, a drone, and the list goes on. Now, please remember, what can be a luxury item for me can be an absolute necessity item for someone else. Now, what you have to do is take everything from the first stack, take nothing with you from the second stack, and you're allowed to take one luxury item with you from the third stack, which you think will bring joy to you in the outdoors. Now, you'll not get this method correct at the very first time, but you'll definitely become an efficient hiker in the longer run, as you'll be able to optimize your weight and you'll be more aware about the things that you actually need to carry in the wilderness.
Oh, wow. That's good.
I think maybe he's from India. I'm not sure.
It has to be like India, Nepal, somewhere over in that area.
Yeah. But what do you think about his advice on packing for a backpacking trip? You think that's pretty good advice?
I think it's good if you're going to do some long trail hiking and you really have to think about your weight.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, one luxury item? Bro. I feel like I have mostly luxury.
If you're a weekend warrior, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, bring whatever.
Whatever's comfortable. Bring it until your backpack's uncomfortable, then don't bring it. You know, like, if your backpack's comfortable and you like the weight and you're cool with it, go. You're good.
Yeah, I think experience is the best teacher. Like, I like watching these clips and stuff, but I think experience, that right there is going to teach you more than anything. Any podcast or YouTube video or absolutely, you know, a buddy. But all right, and I have a couple more.
This guy
his name is Dan Becker Outdoors. I think he's got a YouTube channel as well.
Dan Becker, I never heard of him. That's interesting. Let's check it out. Go ahead, let's play. See what he says.
First up on the list is a jet boil. So I bought a jet boil this past year because I'm not really like a camp chef. Anyway, it gives me the ability to cook meals when I'm just sort of kind of base camping and actually have more than just like the freeze-dried meal that I'm going to boil water for. So if I'm just boiling water, I'm only going to bring maybe a pocket rocket or some sort of a canister stove. But if I want to do a little bit more cooking, I have really enjoyed the jet boil. It's actually been a game changer for me. And then I also do pair it with a MSR quick skillet, just a 7-inch, very lightweight skillet. I didn't used to want to use a jet boil because I thought they were big and bulky and heavy, but now it's on my list of backpacking gear. I really, really, really wish I would have bought a lot sooner because I probably would have eaten a lot better. First.
Are you buying a jet boil?
Probably not.
But what about all the opportunities for cooking?
Dude, I cook all the time on trail without a jet boil.
Yeah, I got the jet boil stash. I mean,
I'm not saying jet boils are bad, and it's not me disagreeing. Like, I'm sure for Dan that it's awesome, but I'm not personally. I mean, I'm sure they're great. I just have little desire to pay that much for something that I have a cook system that works really good. And I cook a lot of stuff. I do have that MSR quick skillet.
Yeah, those are legit, dude.
That thing's awesome.
Skillets, it doesn't have to be MSR. It could be any brand for backpacking, but the skillets, it opens up a whole nother world when it comes to cooking on trail.
Yeah, I when I was when I did which trail was it I was doing What's the one up in the UP? Pictured Rocks. I did Pictured Rocks. Mm-hmm. I did keto the entire week.
You're a bad man. Every morning. That's difficult.
Every single morning, I made eggs. Like I got the ones from Packet Gourmet.
Yeah.
You put the water in, you let it sit, and then you pour that into a skillet and actually cook them like eggs, and you basically get scrambled eggs out of it. Yeah. And I was cooking those every single day with a skillet on a normal stove.
Do you have one of those yellow containers that you can put real eggs in?
Oh, hang on a second, and I will show you.
They're like a little egg carton. I've been looking for like one of those that holds four eggs or two eggs.
Would you mean one of these?
Yes, I have the exact same one, but it holds a dozen eggs. And I'm always
I don't
like,
need something that big.
Yeah, I need one that holds four eggs. Four eggs would be perfect because that's enough for me and another person. You know,
but
if
you know, even six is good. Six I'd be happy if it was six.
Yeah, and if it was two, I could rock that as well. Maybe we're opening doors.
We need to open those doors because this thing is actually awesome.
Like, yeah, especially in the wintertime.
It weighs so little. I mean, they're fantastic.
Yeah, you could buy it at Walmart. Like they have them in the camping section at Walmart. That's where I got mine. But like I said, it holds too many.
Right, right.
It's a weird problem.
Well, and for those who are listening online, it's basically just a big plastic thing that's shaped like eggs, and you put the eggs in, they don't move inside, they don't break on you.
That's
and,
a hard
you
carton.
Can shove that right down into your backpack or in your food bag, and your eggs are unbroken when you get to camp.
Yeah, in the wintertime, I learned this from Mr. Backpacking with Jason, sir. Pre-cook biscuits and, you know, either pre-cook some bacon or bring that, like, already cooked bacon that you can buy at the grocery store. Yeah. And heat that up in your little frying pan. Heat your biscuits up in your little frying pan. Maybe throw some aluminum foil or a lid on top. And then
you know what's really good?
What?
Crumble up some sausage and bring it with you. But don't cook it in advance. And the only reason I say don't cook it in advance is because all the grease you get from it, because it cooks up pretty easy. But all the grease that you get from it makes your eggs taste better.
You're talking about ground sausage?
Yeah, just you know how you buy sausage, it comes in a roll.
Normally
you cut that into patties.
Yeah.
Just crumble it up and put it in a pan and cook that. Man, that is good stuff.
You're making me hungry, bro. I skipped breakfast this morning. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
I could eat. Okay, I got one more. We'll wrap up the podcast here. This is called My Unpopular Opinions About Backcountry Trowels and Bathroom Kits by Lore H. Roneck. Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to wrap with this because it's about the bathroom kits. So let's hear a little bit about these trowels.
All right.
Let's talk backcountry bathroom kits and my unpopular opinion. When it comes to bathroom kits, I would say that the Tent Lab backcountry trowel is probably one of the most popular. I have the Deuce number 3 and I've had it for years, and I mean, it does work well. It works better than most tent stakes or trekking poles. But it's not my favorite because I find it really uncomfortable to dig with, to grasp. It also doesn't work well on hard surfaces. I think one of the best hacks is wrapping the handle with paracord to try and make it more comfortable when digging, but I also think you get the most leverage when you use this trowel upside down. This next backcountry trowel is actually the REI Snow State. Personally, I think this is one of the most underrated backcountry trowels, and a lot of other people would agree with me. It's cheap, lightweight, grips really well in your hand, gives you great leverage when you're digging. But best overall goes to this pack trowel. I was recently introduced to this company, and this trowel came on its first backpacking trip with me. This trowel is such a great design, fits well in your hand, it's lightweight, it's easy to dig with, but that's not the only thing that's so great. Pact makes these tabs that breaks down your poop 10 times faster in the backcountry, as well as kills harmful bacteria. If you're a backcountry camper, you need this to poop more responsibly in the backcountry and to do our part. But if that wasn't enough, if you haven't seen the Pact dehydrated wipes, you're missing out. I wish I had these when I started out backpacking with my kiddo. I dehydrated my own wipes at that time, but this is such an easy, smooth way to have wet wipes in the backcountry and to be more comfortable when going to the bathroom.
All right, you can switch it back over.
Never
to
thought
us.
I'd There's hear no somebody more. Say you need to poop responsibly. That's something that's new for me.
Well, I will say I liked all of her stuff there, and she must have a pretty popular Instagram. Yeah, she's got 42.6K followers.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that video had, is an Instagram reel. All those videos I showed were Instagram reels for the people that are just listening. And that had like 1,600 likes on it. So I would imagine that it was, I don't want to speak out of turn here, because I do the same things with the sponsored content, but I'm assuming that Lauren, that was a sponsored little reel that she put together by Pact, P-A-C-T, and then they
PactOutdoors.com. I'm looking at them right now.
I'd say they paid to boost that, you know, because like if you or I make a video, we can pay like on Facebook or whatever if we want to have more views on it. You pay for it to be pushed out to people. So, or maybe that video just blew up for her. I don't know. It looks like she's based out of Utah. But I loved it all except for the little tablets to throw on your poop, like to throw in your cat hole. That I'm not sold on.
You don't want to responsibly poop?
I think it may be more responsible to poop without them. No offense, Pact.
No, why is that? I'm curious about that one.
Well, I know that human diet has changed a lot in the last 10,000 years. In the last 50 years, right? We got a lot of factory farming, a lot of monocrop agriculture, and our poops may not be what they used to be whenever it comes to what's going into the soil. But I think that it'd be more natural to just dig your cat hole and use any of those that she picked. Like, I have one of those snow stakes. Those are awesome. I don't use it as a trowel, but if I was doing winter backpacking, that's a good idea.
I will say I like the look of the trowel.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like a tube that's been broken. So what I thought, well, it's looks like you
it only weighs 1.1 ounce.
What's the deuce of spades? Because that was the first one she showed, right?
Well, let me look it up real quick.
I mean, I think it's like
good friends at Garage Grown Gear.
I think it's 0.6 ounces, maybe.
Maybe.
So that's, what, 15, 16 grams?
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You'll have to look it up and see. But, yeah, look, that packed trowel reminded me of, like, you had a cheap table, and then you kicked the leg of it and broke it off. You just, like, broke it, like, pulled it back and forth and broke the aluminum leg. Yeah, that's what the trowel looked like to me.
Yeah.
Did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. The weight is what I'm trying to find right now because their website doesn't, like, adjust.
Oh, I see.
So, it's 8 inches by 2.6 by 1. It's their biggest trowel, the one that she had, and it weighs 0.97 ounces.
Okay, so it's negligible.
So, yeah, you're talking 2/10 of an ounce. Maybe less, actually, because it's 0.97 ounces.
Wait a minute. 2/10 of an ounce.
Yeah, it weighs 0.97 ounces.
0.97 ounces?
1 ounces.
That's almost 1 ounce.
I know. That's what I said.
I thought you said 2/10 of an ounce.
It could be. It's close to 2/10 of an ounce because the other one's 1.1.
What? 2/10 of an ounce? That would only be 20% of an ounce, right? That would be 0.2 ounces.
0.1 is 1/10 of an ounce, right?
Yeah, and you said it's 0.97. So it's basically an ounce, like one out of one.
Well, I'm assuming that they're putting 1.1 ounces, but it may be more than that, just a little bit.
Oh, you said it's 1.1. I thought you said it's 0.97.
The other one is.
Oh, there's two different ones. Okay, I see.
Yeah, the packed one is 1.1. The deuce is 0.97.
Okay, so the deuce is less than an ounce. The other's barely over. So they're about the same.
That's what I said. It's maybe at the most 2/10 of an ounce.
Oh, I thought you were saying the weight of the packed one is 2/10 of an ounce. And I was like, you just said it's 0.97. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no.
The math does not math. You know what I'm saying?
So, I mean, I may actually buy this packed one just to give it a try. Because it's smooth. And one of the things I hate about most trowels,
yeah,
like I should say almost all trowels, is that they have edges on them.
Yeah.
which makes them not fun to use.
Yeah, the ones that are really, really light are usually just like bent metal sheet. So, yeah. Like, it feels like it's cutting your hand. I tell you, I've never used one upside down, and that was one of the tips that she gave on the Deuce of Spades.
Yeah, and also the packed one has a 6-inch line on the back, so you can make sure you dug your hole deep enough.
Yeah, but I think the other one's 6 inches too, right?
Well, I'm just saying the packed one actually has a line that says 6 inches on it.
Oh,
and so you can actually set it down into the hole, and you can see whether or not you've dug a deep enough hole.
Yeah, and the Deuce of Spades. Is it Deuce of Spades or Spade?
Deuce of Spades.
Deuce of Spades, okay. So the Deuce of Spades, I think, is 6 inches long, right? So you could stick it down, but you'd have to
this
see.
This one is actually eight. What did they say? 8 inches.
The packed one?
No, the Deuce. Deuce.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It wouldn't have to be fully submerged in your cat hole.
It's also $3 more expensive than the packed one.
Yeah, they're both around 20, 25, something like that.
Yeah, the packed is 20 and the Deuce is $22.95.
Yeah, may depend on where you buy it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of places have those Deuce of Spades. A lot of, like, just brick-and-mortar stores. But I thought that it was cool that she wrapped the cordage around it, some 550 cord, to give a little bit more grip if you're using the Deuce of Spades. I've never used the handle part to dig my hole because I feel like the bottom half would be a little bit sharper and less comfortable to hold. But that packed one looks pretty good. If you use it.
I think, you know, I think I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do.
You're going to test it
out? I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to buy the wipes. I don't really care for the tabs, but I mean, they come with the wipes. So. Oh,
I'll throw those tabs in the trash. I don't get
you're really against those tabs. What? Now, you got to explain to me why you're against the tabs.
I already explained it.
No, you didn't?
Yeah, I think that it's making it less natural. I don't think that the environment needs me to throw a tab in my poop to kill harmful bacteria. Like, what's the harmful bacteria?
Well, that's not what it does. It breaks it down quicker.
Well, yeah, but she explicitly said harmful bacteria, right?
I don't know. All I saw was that, okay, here's the thing. It says, packed mycelium tabs. Mycelium is the root system for fungi and nature's great decomposer. Packed tabs are made with a species of mycelium that breaks down poop in the ground faster while neutralizing harmful bacteria.
What's the harmful bacteria?
I don't know.
And what is it harmful?
I'm not a biologist or a scientist, man.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean,
I do know that human poop doesn't break down fast enough.
Yeah, I know that.
I do know that.
We talked about the poop bags. Because the wag bags out west, I guess the sand washes away or whatever before it can decompose. Or there's like not enough living bacteria or fungus or whatever that breaks it down in the soil.
Yeah. So basically, because there's so much artificial stuff that goes into our bodies, it preserves our poop, which is not good.
Yeah, that's what I was.
And that's why they have to close down different areas because there's too much human feces all over the place.
Well, maybe I'm wrong on it. That's what I was saying about I know how the human diet has changed, you know, a lot in 10,000 years, but a lot in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Because, like, people find McDonald's burgers from, 1986, and it still looks the same. Because all the preservatives.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Well, I'm not eating McDonald's burgers, so it doesn't bother me.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and buy this stuff.
Oh, my
I'm
going to
bite the bullet. I'm going to buy it.
Dude.
I'm going to buy it.
Lauren's advertisement worked.
Well, I like the trowel.
Yeah, the trowel.
And I already use Wissy Wipes, and I really like them, but they can be a little rough sometimes.
Yeah, you got to wet them, right?
These look softer. Yeah. Well, you just got to put some water on them. These look a little softer.
Well, let me know.
And so I might get them. I might make my tush feel better. Oh, and this is really cool. It actually puts wipe storage. It's got a little insert that goes into the trowel that stores the wipes for you.
So you store the wipes inside the trowel?
In the trowel, yeah.
Oh, that's smart. That's really, really smart.
Yeah. Takes up less space in your bag that way?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I think I'm going to make this happen. I think I'm going to get it. It's $35 for the entire kit.
Yeah, $35.
So I think I'm going to get it. And give me a few weeks to get a trip out. and I will report back as to whether or not this is something worth having.
We're going to have a live reporting from the field. Mr. John Kelly, while pooping, letting us know how well the trowel and the wipes are doing. Are they soft on the tushy? Live from
are
the
they?
Wilderness.
Are they soft on the tushy? I'm Apple paying these suckers right now, dude.
I'm excited to hear. I didn't foresee this happening. John is getting new gear.
I didn't foresee
gear.
This happening, but I'm very interested.
Well,
so
we've had our poop talk. Let's wrap this thing.
We have.
We've been talking for like an hour and 15 minutes.
Listen. Here's the deal, man. Here's the deal. I am so excited about getting a new trowel.
You got to have it right now. Is it gonna...
I have to do this. This has to be done.
It deserves immediate attention.
It does. And I am clicking to pay on my phone right now.
It shows up at the door. Your wife's like, "What, John? What is this? Another poop shovel? How many poop shovels do you need, John?"
That would mean my wife would have to be interested in my backpacking gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, did you hear that ding ding thing?
Is that a note? No, I didn't hear it. Is that a notification that your order went through?
It went through.
All right, it's on the way.
So we have ordered it. I have fallen for their advertising, and we are going to get one.
Hey.
We're going to get us a packed trowel.
We talk for an hour. The short form content is the future, man. It's how you sell.
It is, man. It is.
Maybe we're doing it wrong.
With that said, for myself and Jeremiah, we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Adios, folks.